A flower next to weeds. From the first, her virtues gained admiration, even from those who were furthest from imitating them, and those to whom she was subject left her free to follow the promptings of zeal for a short time. The innocence of her life, the precautions she took to avoid all occasions of sin, and above all her extreme reserve with regard to all which might in the slightest degree wound modesty, appeared to the young people of the village a tacit reproach to the licentious life which they led. Several endeavored to turn her astray in the hope of tarnishing the splendor of a virtue which dazzled them. Although she neglected none of her domestic labors and was ever ready to assist others, her relatives murmured greatly at her spending all her free time in prayer, and as she would not work on Sundays and feast days, they would deprive her of food the entire day. Seeing that they gained nothing by this means, they had recourse to more violent measures, often ill-treating her in the most shameful manner. When she went to the chapel, they would send boys to throw stones at her and calumniate her, while drunken men, or those pretending to be such, would pursue her and threaten her life. But fearless of these artifices, she continued her exercises as if in the enjoyment of the most perfect liberty and peace. She did not hesitate to say, when there was occasion for it, that she would die rather than give up the practice of the Christian religion. Catherine showed an extraordinary firmness of spirit against human respect. She had much to suffer from the mockeries of the sorcerers, of the drunkards, of all the enemies of the practice of the faith. When her own uncle, the chief man of the lodge, turned against her, what could she expect from others but ill treatment of every sort? Her firmness, which nothing and no one could shake, irritated her heathen relatives more and more. They called her a sorceress. They cast stones at her whenever she went to the chapel, and yet she seemed to be utterly devoid of fear. Though timid as a deer, she had the courage of a panther at bay, and was no less quick to act when the time for action came. One day, when she was employed as usual in her uncle's lodge, a young Indian suddenly rushed in upon her. His face was filled with rage, his eyes flashing fire, his tomahawk raised above his head as if to strike her dead at the least opposition. Kateri did not cry out, did not make an appeal for mercy, nor promise to abandon the course she was taking. With perfect composure, without tremor or twitch of a muscle, she simply bowed her head on her breast and stood before the wild and desperate young savage as immovable as a rock. Words were not needed on either side. The rage in the Indian's eyes died out and gave place to wonder, then awe. He gazed as if spellbound. The uplifted tomahawk dropped to his side. Her firmness unnerved him. Admiration, then a strange fear, overmastered the young brave, whose brain perhaps had been somewhat clouded with liquor when he undertook to rid the old chief's niece of her Christian whims. Be that as it may, he could not have been more astonished at what he beheld if a spirit had appeared before him and ordered him out of the lodge. Cowed and abashed, he slunk away. It was the last trial she was called upon to endure in the land of her birth. It was the only one, perhaps, that could have estranged her from the nearest kindred of her beloved Mohawk Valley, for we are told that she was particularly sensitive to the reproach they made of her of having no natural affection for her relations and of hating her nation. Had this been true, she would have never remained at her uncle's lodge as long as she did under the particular conditions. This was particularly the case with one of her aunts, who succeeded only too well in making the life of Kateri a torture. She was the direct cause of her last and severest trial in the Mohawk country. Her cruel aunt tried by every means in her power to brand the virtue of her niece as a mere pretense to Father de Lamberville, and accused her of evil crimes she did not commit, though it did not work on the virtuous priest. Her family declared that Christianity was making her lazy and worthless because she refused to work on Sunday. if she had been accustomed to waste away her time in amusements as the other young Indians, she would not have been so treated. But her ill-natured aunts, for whom she had worked industriously all her life, now begrudged her the one day of rest out of seven which she took for the sake of her conscience. Sunday generally proved not a feast, but a fast day to Kattery. Her life was becoming intolerable. There was no longer even a shadow of protection in her home. Her uncle had beset her path with drunken men and taunting children. She was deprived of food. She was threatened with death. And last of all, her aunt had done what she could to defame her to her father in Christ. The priest was now her only friend, and his advice to her was to leave the country as soon as possible and take refuge at the Jesuit mission.